and welcome to episode 194 of Speak Beastie for January 7th, 2024. I'm Amy.
I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Liz!
Happy New Year!
Woo! Oh, that's right. It's New Year's.
It's the first episode of the year.
Wow.
Love it. I feel special.
I'm blowing the little, like, party kazoos with the streamer on the end. Just imagine that.
Hey, I bang pots, man.
Nice. I love it.
Oh, boy. And carrying on that celebratory attitude, we would like to thank this episode's sponsor from Patreon, and that is Beth W. Thank you, Beth, so much for your support.
Thank you.
Always a good thing. We love our Patreon supporters.
Yeah, we
Yes, we do.
Eventually, I'll have more sticker designs for y'all.
Hey, they're always worth the wait, in my opinion.
That's good to hear. Oh, okay, so for the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs Knees and How.
We have no news except the best news, which is that Jeff officially had his baby.
Yay! Yay, Jeff!
We are delayed congratulating you, but we are congratulating you at least in terms of the podcast. We've all sent messages.
Congratulations, yay. Jeff and Ashley.
Yay.
You'll be wonderful parents.
Oh, I'm so happy for them. It's so cute. The baby's so cute.
I'm so happy for them. And you know, Jeff's going to be a great parent. Like, I can't wait to see all the fun shenanigans. That they get up to.
They've absolutely got all the dad jokes down already, so it'll be a breeze.
Such a breeze.
So that's our news for our Phoenix Register this week. And now on to Owl Post. And for our Owl Post today, what was your favorite Fantastic Beast or Harry Potter moment of 2023? And we had some wonderful from our common room comments. One from Liz was HPAC and how you learned so much this year from all the amazing talks.
I really did.
And Lori Kim piled onto that and said how wonderful the conference was this year as well. And then let's see, Jeff contributed that he liked doing MistyCon. There was so much packed into those 4 days, I couldn't begin to break it all down. It's a good thing he got pictures, and every moment was a memory. And let's see, Lori also said about MistyCon that it was one of the proudest parts of her year, and that we owe so much to, oh, she was responding to Jeff. We owe so much to you stepping up and making your magic. So, and then let's see, the last thing was from Lori Kim again, and she talked about meeting Marjolin at LeakyCon and Marjolin responded how much she loved it. I completely agree, because LeakyCon was the first time I've ever done a conference of any kind this year. And so doing that with everybody from Speak Beastie was super fun. I think that was my highlight of the year as well.
I love it.
That's awesome. Yay.
I think after seeing all of Jeff's pictures of all their performances this year, I feel like that's on my 2024 bucket list, is to go to a Jeff performance at a con. Like, yes. I need to see the performances in person.
No. It's amazing. Watching him play is really fun. So
I just need to go to a con in person. I haven't been to one in so long because HPAC has the online component, which is great for people like me on the West Coast that can't always fly over. I totally get why LeakyCon doesn't do that, but I need LeakyCon to start doing it. You know what I'm saying?
So. I just need LeakyCon to be somewhere I can get quickly and easily, like it was this year. All I had to do was hop on the train in the morning.
See, I need them to come to, like, Phoenix or maybe even Denver. I know they were at Denver recently, but, like, I had stuff and I couldn't go. So I'm like, please come back.
Oh, yeah, that was 2 years ago,
wasn't it? I definitely need to get to a con next year. I haven't been to one since...
You were supposed to be at LeakyCon, weren't you?
2019. I was, yeah. And then I had the reality check of how much college classes cost.
Oh, fair.
And needing to take them to get my teacher certification. And I was like, well, crap. I won't be going there.
Fair.
Well, this year, it's in Portland, right?
I think so.
I think.
I feel like that's why I have a Portland flight alert. It may not be, though.
No, I think you might be right. I think Portland is next year. That sounds right.
Portland, Oregon?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, like, I'm tempted to go. Maybe. I don't know. Life's busy.
Keep me posted because I have family in Seattle. Maybe I will make the trek.
Because I'm like, I have to go to a family wedding in July, and I'm like, do I want to then travel again just like 2 weeks later?
Right.
And I'm supposed to be going to a Taylor Swift concert in November, so I should probably buy those things soon.
Sooner the better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, all so.
Right. Thank you for that, Carolyn. So moving on into our main discussion, since we have our new baby beastie, we're going to talk about baby beasts this episode.
Woo.
In honor of the adorable new member of the beastie family, Avery. And we wanted to celebrate it with this special discussion. So, we are all Bunty helping Newt take care of these little baby beasts. So, we need to make sure we know how to.
Yes.
So, we've compiled a list of beasts, and we're going to talk about how to take care of them. So, how to feed them, how to build them a nest if they need a nest, and what we think their favorite toy might be.
I'm so ready.
So,
this is great.
This is going to be great.
I'm so excited.
A lot of guesswork here.
It's like fan fiction, sort of.
My random additions to this part of the doc are all bounded in.
Hey, they're. I always love your additions.
Those are all fact, man.
So.
They're all fact, okay? I did heavy amounts of research in my head.
Well, I would expect nothing less. We're going to start off with the Akami. So, how to feed them. We do know from the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them book that Akamis eat rats and birds, but have also been known to carry off monkeys. So, I was wondering, do baby Akamis eat the same thing? Do they have smaller options like mice instead of rats?
I mean, I feel like, so if I think about how like baby snakes are, you know, I feel like maybe they start with like little like pinkies, like the little baby mice, and like work their way up to like bigger rats and birds and monkeys, you know?
Yeah. The interesting thing about this, too, is the book says that rats and birds, But in the movie, we have the scene with the teapot where it's going after the beetle.
Maybe it just goes for anything. Maybe. Right? Because with its, like, little bird beaky, insects, make sense.
Maybe when trapped in an attic with Slim Pickens.
Maybe it ate all the rats in the attic.
Oh, yeah.
A raccoon had to come around in a bit. I don't know.
I'm sure Dougal was trying.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. So then building them a nest, we do know from the movie that it looks like bamboo and leaves.
Solid. Great nesting materials, personally.
Yep, it works. Favorite toy? Marjolaine had written down before a teapot, question mark.
Anything it could, like, practice its fun skills, you know? Like, what are some, maybe, like, toilet paper?
It's like a cat. If I fits, I sits.
Okay, my cat does not do that, though, which is kind of disappointing. It does not sit in boxes as hard as I try.
Mine does. Actually, mine's partial to Trader Joe's bags.
Oh.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
He will climb into that thing.
See.
Loves a good paper bag.
Yeah.
Mine used to do the paper bags when he was smaller, and then he looped his head in the handle and freaked himself out. Even though he pulled himself right back out, but that was, like, too freaky for him, so now he just doesn't mess with them. But an Akami wouldn't have that problem.
Nope.
No, not at all. So, just shrink on up.
Basically. All right, so cat mentality, if it fits, it shrinks. Exactly. I like it.
So then we've got Graphorns. And how to feed them. From the movie, they do seem to be meat eaters. We see Newt and Jacob feeding them in the case, tossing them a hunk of meat.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that part.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe as babies, like fresh out that womb, maybe they like do, would Graphorns be like cows or other things and maybe like nurse the babies for a bit?
Maybe.
That's a good question. I always pictured them grazing because I completely forgot that scene. feed them the meat.
I mean, if they're technically mammals, then they should have mammary glands initially. Mm-hmm. So, like, they could go from, like, milk or whatever a Graphorn produces, you know? Mm-hmm. And then maybe they, like, graze and then they eat meat. Like, maybe they work up to it.
That would make sense. I know some of the descriptions of them say they look kind of like saber-toothed tigers or get mistaken
as them. Ooh, okay.
Beck.
Same.
Yeah, so maybe.
I also get mistaken for a saber-toothed tiger regularly.
All the time.
The best kind of tiger.
Sorry.
And then build them a nest. Do they need one? Do they have one? I don't know.
I like your note about the caves, because I feel like they probably have, like, live births. Mm-hmm. So they're probably not building, like, a nest per se, more as, like, they're just settling in a spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know when I had looked them up and was researching, not in my head, but on the internet sources. I did find that they typically live in mountainous regions, so that's where I was thinking, like, caves might come in.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I like it.
We'll go with it.
I like caves, too. I thought of pens just because of where Newt has them, but, like...
That's true. Yeah. But a cave would, like, protect them from elements and, like, kind of keep them a little secluded.
Yeah.
That could work.
And then favorite toy. What do we think they like to play with?
I think that they'd like something they can push around with their tentacles, like a ball or something. Like, this is weird niche thing, but I grew up with pet pigs, and as like a source of entertainment, we'd give them used bowling balls for them to like push around with their snouts. And that's kind of just what I picture a graphorn doing with like their tentacles.
Oh my gosh.
I can't explain it, okay? That's just like the picture that first came when I researched in my mind, okay?
I love that this is going to become a thing.
It is. Researching your head. It's a thing now.
All right, so then we've got our favorite little guys, the Deary Call. How do we feed them?
Okay, so my weird bird brain. Bird. I like birds. I don't have a brain the size of a bird, I hope.
I thought you were just insulting yourself.
I was going to say.
No, I like to think I'm slightly more intelligent than the average bird. But, you know.
I would agree with that.
Thanks. I think based on their beaks that the adults probably eat fruits and nuts. So babies could probably eat that. But also, a ton of birds like chickens and pigeons and like macaws, a lot of birds, have a crop and they have a gizzard. And these are just like weird parts before their stomach that grind down food and like create weird food stuff. But in bird crops, they can produce milk, which is just kind of like a weird creamy like hodgepodge of the food they've consumed that they then like will cough up into their baby's mouth to feed them. So I feel like deer calls could do that.
I feel like that makes sense. Yeah,
I like it.
So I was kind of looking and trying to research dodos, mm-hmm. because we know in wizarding lore, deer calls are the same as what muggles call dodos, and they believe these birds to be extinct. So yeah, that checks. Fruit and nuts, because that's what mm-hmm. dodos also ate.
Yeah, because just the little, that makes sense. The little beakies, because they have the slightly oversized beak that comes to a point which is typically used to, like, break open nuts, but it can also be mm-hmm. used for fruit, so. Sorry, I know a lot of weird things about birds, guys.
The more you know.
It's just a weird, interest for Liz, so.
So then, building them a nest. I see, Liz, you've got some stuff down here.
Yeah, I feel like they build, like, a pretty standard bird nest with, like, sticks and twigs and, like, things they find, like, string and other feathers, you know, dependent on where they live.
I can see that. Yeah.
Like,
I wrote down, too, what dodos build their nests on the ground and surround them by grass, which I thought it was kind of funny, the article that I read this in pointed out, yeah, that's why they were so vulnerable to predators.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. It's like, all right, I've got a nest right here on the ground where anybody can walk on up.
Well, because, like, dodo birds couldn't fly, right? Or we don't really think they could fly based on the size of
them. Right.
So, if you can't fly, you can't really get up the tree to build the nest.
Can't fly, but no that's natural where, predators like, until the...
I wonder if Duracalls would build up in a tree, because is their teleportation limited only to the ground? Or could they technically teleport upwards?
That's a good question. I kind of like the vibe that they could teleport upwards and, like, mimic other birds.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's where they're hiding now.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. Up in the trees.
That's what's in all the forests alongside Bigfoot. That's why we haven't found them all. They're all in like the same one square mile. We haven't searched
yet. Who do you think taught Bigfoot how to teleport?
Wait, Bigfoot, I didn't realize he could teleport now. I missed that memo.
No. More can research they... in my head.
Oh.
So you really had Liz going. She believed it. So what do we think the Dairy Call's favorite toy would be?
I mean, I voted a cute bell, like what my sister's cockatoo bird likes, because I just picture this, like, well, because, you know, they, like, vanish and do their thing, which just gives me very playful vibes, so I feel like they'd be really into, like, ringing bells.
And
I don't know.
Once I didn't even add it to the doc. I thought of it after, though. Mirrors.
Ooh, yeah.
Birds love mirrors.
Yeah.
Or at least I remember the parakeet we had as a child loving the mirror.
I think they like to look at themselves. And I mean, I don't blame them. Most birds look pretty cool, so I'd want to do that too.
Agreed.
I'll send a picture to you guys, but my sister has three birds. She has like a cockatooy thing, and I don't know what mango is, but it's a green bird. And then she has a parrotlet. Maybe that's what mango is. But then she has fern, which is a tiny green one. I'll send you guys pictures, but I see birds do a lot of weird things now when I'm at her house because of all of her birds. She has, like, each size of bird.
So next up, we've got the Niffler. So how do we feed baby Nifflers? I thought, you know, since they're basically like a rodent or a platypus, maybe it's a cross of their diets, like insects, worms, small fish.
I vibe with that. I feel like small fish is probably like a last resorty kind of thing, just because we don't really see the Nifflers like swim a ton. So I feel like that's a more effort exhausting one, but like digging for worms and insects, I totally see them doing it.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And see, because I have inevitable mom brain, I think of the Nifflers like a toddler. So dangle the shiny thing in front of them, get them to eat.
See, and I built off that and I was like, cover worms in edible glitter? Question mark.
There you go, edible glitter.
You know, like the gold leaf and like kind of stuff they put on cakes and, you know.
Oh my gosh.
So to show them where their food is.
The edible gold.
So if you're doing like the little like here comes the airplane thing with a Niffler, technically the fork or the spoon would be shiny, right?
Exactly.
So they'd actually like watch it and go cross-eyed and watch it go into their mouth.
So I guess that
exactly.
Because like they love to collect the shiny things, but we don't really see them try to eat the shiny things.
Right.
So maybe we shouldn't cover their food in shiny stuff because then they won't eat it.
No, that's just to get them to focus. You two do not have children. You just get them to focus. The shiny thing gets them looking, and then you feed them.
That is not how I get my nephews to focus. I give them, like, arts and crafts.
But that's the shiny object for a little nephew, as opposed to a Niffler.
I think they just focus on me when I'm there because I'm favorite auntie. So I'm the focus. I'm what chills them out. Mm-hmm. I love my nephews.
I just remember all the different things I did to get my kids to pay attention long enough to eat.
Oh, see, like, my nephews were always, like, pretty good about it because they'd ask for certain things. Which meant Logan wanted, have you guys seen Emily, I forget her last name, on TikTok? She makes like this salmon thing where it's like shredded salmon and like rice and seaweed. It's really tasty, but that's all that Logan wanted to eat. And we made it with like tuna for him.
Interesting.
And then Jack... Right now, he's on a toast kick. So if you're like, Jack, do you want some toast? He's like, yeah. So he eats like 4 pieces of toast in one sitting.
Now there's a kid after my own heart. I love bread.
I love kids. Sorry.
So how do we build Nifflers a nest?
Oh, shiny things.
kind of nest does a plat?
Absolutely.
I'm Googling because I don't think I looked it up.
We saw a Niffler nest in the first movie. It was like that hollowed out piece of a tree, and he just was surrounded by shiny things.
Oh, like kind of, okay,
see?
That's fun.
Research in my head works. Sometimes.
I feel like
it makes
hollowed
out tree, and it was shiny.
Because that's kind of like a burrow-esque thing, and I definitely get like a burrowy feel from them because of like the voleness of them, you know?
Yeah.
I like that. And if it's not covered in shiny things, what use would it be?
And it just, I mean, I felt like it just had to have shiny stuff everywhere in that little burrow type thing.
Yeah. I like that.
So. Yeah. That makes sense. And then their favorite toy.
We all have some very different things on this list.
Yeah.
Anything shiny.
Yes.
I'm gonna go with broke college student's attitude and say a piece of tinfoil.
There you go. It works.
I said like children's fake money or jewelry. Some of like that really bad painted gold coins and stuff.
See, but I feel like the Niffler would hate that because it's not real. Shiny, but it's not real.
But like maybe a baby Niffler would be okay with it, because maybe like their detection skills aren't there yet, you know?
And they really do just go after shiny. Now, they don't, I mean, you don't see them like biting the gold to make sure it's real.
Yeah.
Right. Like the baby Nifflers in the second movie, they were fascinated by the foil on the champagne bottle.
Yeah. That's
very true.
I mean, I'm fascinated by foil on a champagne bottle too, because to me that just reads classy.
Classy.
No matter how much I paid for it. So I get it.
Then we have bow truckles. So how do we feed them? From the Harry Potter books, we know that they eat insects and wood lice.
As one does.
Yeah, of course. Tasty.
Yum, yum.
My question would be, do they get it, like, do they have to get it themselves, though? You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like
do the parents go out and forage?
I feel like as an adult bow truckle, they've got it down, but like...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm picturing like a mommy or daddy bow truckle with, you know, their long sticky fingers. And there's like a different beetle skewered on each finger, and they like bring them back to the nest, and all the little baby bow truckles like pull a beetle off and eat it.
Ooh.
That's the picture in my head right now.
I like it though.
Oh, good. Because it felt a little morbid, low key.
I mean, birds basically puke in baby birds' mouths.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
fair.
So then, building them a nest, I was thinking maybe something high up in a tree or like a hollow in the side of a tree.
I was also wondering if they might be like hollow in a tree, but slightly lower to the ground to, one, avoid like if the tree was cut, then like the nest going with it, or like two, being near bird nests, because I feel like little baby birds, as they're starting to like transition from like crop milk to like eating other things, would definitely go after baby bow truckles.
That's fair. They also don't want to get picked up and accidentally used to make a bird's nest because they are twigs.
That's true. That would be a bummer. Big bumsies.
I wonder if they even would have a nest, because they just seem to be hanging out on the tree.
Well, I feel like they'd have to have a nest, because I'm just thinking, like, this sounds bad, okay. So, like, the graphorn, I'm just picturing them in the cave, like, you know, having their little live births of, like, a baby graphorn. But for a bow truckle, I'm picturing, like, just all of these baby, like, all of, like, so many baby bow truckles all at once. Like, you know how snails will, like, lay their thing of eggs, and there's, like, so many of them. I don't know if bow truckles lay eggs, but I'm just picturing, like, a ton of babies at once, if that makes sense. I don't know where they store them in their body, but... Maybe they do, like, seahorses where they have, like, the little pouch or something. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
That could work. I mean, seahorses are, like, a similar structure in that they're, like, very bony.
Yeah. I don't know. That's all I got.
And what about their favorite toy?
Okay. I said something that's, like, stringish because I thought they would enjoy wrapping it around themselves or, like, in between their fingers. Like, fun colored rope or maybe, like, flower stems that, you know, they could achieve the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I'd say mirrors, but the fairy problem. Because, like, they live near fairies sometimes, and fairies like mirrors. So I feel like the fairies would just take them.
What about, like a flower? You know, like you make the flower crowns?
Oh, that, yeah. I like that.
That's cute. I like that, too.
Okay. I also like the idea of watching a bow truckle braid one of those things.
Right? New sticker idea. A bow truckle wearing a flower crown.
Oh, it's going to be on the list. My new year is going to be to knock out like 5 or 6 of these things.
I need you to send me that one specifically.
I'll make a special set of coasters just for you.
Thank you.
One of the bow truckle with like the colored string doing those like cat's cradle.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Cat's cradle. This will just be a sticker sheet for the Speak Beastie. Patreon.
What about jumping rope with like the flower stems, like doing little jump rope together?
Oh, that'd be so cute.
I love it.
Lots of fun ideas. My moon calf has got to get out on paper, man. It's driving me crazy.
All right. So then the phoenix. How do we feed them? Well, in the movies, we do see Credence giving the baby phoenix birdseed that he steals. So maybe when they grow up, they eat more like regular birds of prey? But the babies go with the birdseed?
Yeah, but there's also a note here, or that's just Credence being silly. Which...
Just being a silly boy.
Which I kind of think is the more likely scenario. He doesn't strike me as, I mean...
Probably.
He doesn't strike me as amazing as my head research. You know what I mean?
No.
That's fair. That's... Well, and I feel like it's always just, like, the go-to, like, birds eat seed, right? Like...
Right. And he doesn't know it's a phoenix.
That's true.
What did he think that was?
I don't know.
Just a little bird?
Maybe a pigeon? I don't know. I feel like maybe they have the crop milk, too. Maybe?
Maybe.
But I definitely feel like at some point they transition to, like, mice or, you know.
I picture a phoenix and a thunderbird in the same kind of vein of, like,
hawk-type
hunters or eagle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I vibe with that.
My assumption would be that as babies they would feed similarly to how an eagle or a hawk would feed their young.
Mm-hmm. I'm down for that.
Makes sense. So then building them a nest, I did a little bit more research and found, according to legend, phoenixes build their nests right before they're going to get ready to be reborn. And they build that nest out of cinnamon twigs and resin on top of the Temple of the Sun in Egypt. And then... it ignites from the sun and is reborn from the ashes.
That's a very specific way to go die and be reborn.
I really want to like
know what
that.
They mean by resin.
I don't know why cinnamon twigs. I don't know.
That's specific.
Says the person who did not. I wonder if cinnamon's like a thing for.
I don't know.
It's a flavor like sage kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, along the same vein, but I don't think it is.
It's something to do with the spices. It has some sort of significance. I don't know. I was, like, getting bits and pieces of this legend. I was like, I don't really fully get it. But something about that. Yeah.
So, in nature, resin is, like, produced by plants. Mm-hmm. So, like, plant sap. Probably to, like, keep it all together. you know?
Right.
Right.
That's what I'm guesstimating. I don't know. I like that. I think that's really fun. I feel like the Temple of the Sun is gonna get crowded, though, with all the phoenixes.
Mm-hmm. Unless there's really only one.
There's supposed to only be one until it's reborn, but I don't know.
But that would mean Fox is the only one.
Yeah. That feels like really convenient for plot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Agreed.
I got nothing.
I mean, that's like according to the actual legend. I don't know what the deal is in HP lore. Yeah.
Well, other than what they said in Fantastic Beasts, for that matter. It will always come to my family.
Right.
How do I get that gig of the phoenix always coming to my family? Someone let me know.
You have sounds to be related like a good to deal. Dubois.
Oh, well, I guess there's still time.
So what do they play with? What's their favorite toy?
I feel like phoenixes don't have toys.
No, I can't picture, like, even a baby phoenix. I feel like baby is still very serious.
Yeah. It's like one of those serious babies. You've seen those kids before, right? Like,
yeah.
There's always one that's just, like, kind of sitting in the corner thinking.
It's just, they feel so...
Doing research in their brain.
Doing research in their head.
They give me royal family vibes, where you're like, does that kid ever play with a toy? Or...
Yeah.
Like, right, because I think about, like, the pictures that come out of the royal family, and they never quite look like or appear like children, like, even with what they're wearing, right? It's that mm-hmm. whole facade kind of thing, and I feel like that's a phoenix.
Yeah.
It's kind of how I'm feeling about it, too.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then one of the few beasts that we do get to see as a baby, which is great... the chillin. How do we feed them? We give them Aberforth soup. Because why not?
I think that would be its favorite food. I'm down.
I mean, it should be. I think when they're not eating Aberforth soup, though, they're probably little herbivores eating mm-hmm. them plant leaves.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I really hope Aberforth soup's vegetarian then.
Well, you know.
You know.
Oops. They were trying, okay? They were making a valiant effort to take care of the bite.
Very true.
So then, building them a nest. How do they nest?
I still say it's Newt's case all the way. It's just, they all just climb in.
I say when they're not nesting in Newt's case... They give me build like a little thing of leaves and soft grass in a cave. That's yeah. the vibe I get.
I mean, the mom is just kind of in the woods.
That's true. Like,
maybe very deer-like.
Well, that's true. I don't know much about deer babies other than it's a live
Bambi
because mammals. I didn't watch a lot of Bambi as a kid. Okay, I was a Barbie Rapunzel girly. That's what I watched. So
it was like a little thicket, basically a bunch of bushes.
I forget thicket's a word.
You can always tell where the deer sleep in the woods because it's all like mushed down.
I don't know what just kidding. I know what deer you guys have because I'm a desert rat, so we have white-tailed deer that chill in the desert on the sand.
Well, if it's a desert chillin', it's going to be like that.
Yeah.
Perfect. Let me go out and find one. My New Year's mission. Pay into the Patreon to support this goal.
Oh, my gosh. Now, unlike the phoenix, I feel like the chillin' is probably very playful as a baby.
Yes. I'm not sure with what, though.
Yeah.
Like, part of me pictures them with, like, a rope dog toy. but I also don't know where they'd get something like that. So I guess the next best thing is, like, a stick that they're kind of just, like, tossing about.
I just keep going back to chillin' equals Bambi. And I just picture it frolicking, discovering things.
That's true. Yeah. I feel like it does a lot of frolicking.
Mm-hmm. Playing with butterflies.
Yeah.
Following little bugs. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I like it. We need the reboot of the Bambi movie, which I'm sure is inevitable at this point. With yeah. all of
you mean,
those reboots.
You mean air quotes, live action?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not really live yeah, action.
Not
but
really it needs live to be animated. A chili. That's the next Fantastic Beasts.
I still thought that was hilarious. Live action Lion King. Are we watching the same movie?
Hey,
those are getting, not real lions.
There's like the Mufasa one coming out this next year too. That's also in that like that same pseudo live action format.
Ugh, just why?
Because they can't come up with original ideas.
Apparently.
I mean, look, they should be buying all of these ideas I've given them, right? Fantastic Beasts, The Way of the Water. And now we're going to have, like, Fantastic Bambi, The Journey of the Chillin. Like,
there you go.
You know?
Hey, yes. Hey, both Bambi and the Chillin, Mama dies.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's true. Mm-hmm. Do we have an episode on that, just comparing Bambi and Secrets of Dumbledore? Because I'll rewatch Bambi just for that.
No, but I'm willing to be on that episode. This is why
I'm pretty sure that was like the first thing I said after the movie. I was like, okay. It's like Bambi.
I was like,
how could they?
Poor Chillin.
Why?
I'm still low-key bummed we didn't get a Funko Pop of the Chillin' because I wanted one.
I know!
Actually, I'm kind of surprised because that seemed like low-hanging fruit. Like, super adorable animal central to the plot. Right?
They didn't do any of them for Secrets of Dumbledore, so I don't think they got, like, the licensing to do it.
No plushie? Like,
or they didn't bother to try.
Yeah. Crazy.
Wild times.
Now we have our friend, the demiguys, Dougal.
Dougal.
So how would we feed baby Dougal?
I seriously, you have to find him first. I put it in the notes for a reason.
I do definitely feel like until they have control over their invisibility that baby demiguys are just like invisible the majority of the time.
Yeah.
You just don't know where they are.
This is totally what my thought process was like, it's just going to be, like, flickering in and out of...
Yeah. They do give me mammal vibes, though, of, like, they probably have milk at some point, and then switch to, like, herbivory, like, plants mm-hmm. and stuff.
Herbivory.
Like, primates.
Yeah.
I mean, we see fruit. Dougal take a lollipop, man. So they like
hey,
the
I
sugar.
Hey, I mean, as he should. Lollipops are good.
Does have a sweet tooth.
I did feel bad for that poor little kid, though.
But it's also, like, so reminiscent of that scene in... Is it Prisoner of Azkaban? Where the lollipop gets yeah. stuck to the invisibility cloak.
Oh, yeah.
I love the callback. So, Demiguy's nest. What do we think that's like?
I feel like they might have, like, their little space... But yeah. I feel like it's not a nest because since it's primate-y, mm-hmm. I feel like it also has a live birth. Mm-hmm. So they may just, like, chill at their little place they call home.
Yeah. Definitely. Agreed.
But I hope it has lots of, like, soft grass for comfort.
And their favorite toy?
I still say lady's purse.
I love it.
They like to play dress up.
They like to play hey. Dress up. Exactly.
Everyone should. It's fun.
And then we have the moon calf.
The moon calf.
Which we do see these guys getting fed in Newt's case. They're like these little floating pebble bubble thingies that Jacob tosses them. And they suck them out of the air.
Nice.
Were those bubbles or were they actual little, like, because my first thought was, like, cat food or dog food, like, dry food.
Mm-hmm.
That just had, like, a levitation charm on it.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out, because they look like little like bubbly things, but they could be like pellets of something with like anti-gravity on them. I don't know.
I feel like that makes sense because just based on like cute mooncalf lore, I feel like you would need to put a little anti-gravity kind of vibe on anything you fed them. Mostly so like they spread out while they eat and they don't like dogpile each other. You know?
Yeah.
That's very like Newt though. I feel like to have developed some type of pelleted feed to give them. Mm-hmm. That does feel like something he'd like develop in his little case of wonders.
Mm-hmm. And then I wrote down, maybe they like space ice cream.
I mean, it's pretty tasty. Maybe.
Dippin' Dots.
Yes.
That is kind of what it looks like. Floating Dippin' Dots.
I love it.
So then building them a nest.
UFO spaceship.
I second it.
Wait till I finish my drawing. We'll post it on the socials, everybody.
Oh my gosh, a little moon calf poking out of a spaceship.
I'm for it.
Oh no. He's just going to be under the UFO spaceship, just looking up.
Oh, because he just got like beamed down.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's what they're doing when they're making the crop circles. Maybe they're trampling ground to make their nest.
That could be cool. Maybe it's like how they differentiate like the nesting grounds of different groups of mooncalfs.
Yeah.
That's a vibe. I like it.
I like that a lot.
I like that.
And their favorite toy.
Okay. I immediately went to those glow-in-the-dark stars and stickers you'd put on your ceiling.
Yes. When you were a kid. Yes.
And you'd make all the little constellations.
Yeah. Right. And then it would glow in the dark while you were going to sleep. And so, like, I picture the perfect toy for a moon calf being glow-in-the-dark all the things in the room.
I love it. I also feel like they would really get into someone just using a yo-yo in front of them. Just like watching it go, I feel like, because it's like, you know, the kind of bouncy, like they are,
their little heads going back and like, forth. Oh my gosh,
I feel like it would entertain them for hours.
wait to pile onto that, a light up yo-yo.
Yes. Oh, mm-hmm. It reminds them of their UFO spaceship.
Exactly.
Full circle moment.
Oh. Yay.
We've brought it all back.
It's full circle.
Or a bubble maker.
Ooh.
Like, can you picture them like chasing all the bubbles down?
It's not dark all the time, so I love the bubble maker.
Yeah, they would totally love that. I'm just picturing the herd of them like chasing the bubbles over a hill.
Well, they are probably sleeping during daylight hours. I love the idea of a bubble maker entertaining them.
I love it.
All right. Well, that was a cute main discussion.
So cute. I have so
many babies everywhere.
Serious.
Yes.
I have so many pictures of baby creatures doing cute things in my head now.
Especially Fantastic Beast babies.
I know. And we're going to keep the baby train just chugging right along for a brand new segment.
Yay!
I'm so excited about this one.
So we are calling this segment The Beasts Among Us. So we're going to be talking about a muggle creature because it kind of relates to what we're discussing today. And I think this is the first time I've ever hosted a segment before too. So that's so fun.
Yay!
So for the fun first, The Beasts Among Us, we're talking about panda diplomacy. What? That's wild. We're talking about giant pandas and their babies. Because giant pandas have some interesting stuff going on in terms of their conservation efforts and babies and what just happened with some panda babies and pandas in the U.S. So we're just going to talk about pandas. Get excited. I'm excited. So giant pandas are technically bears. They're in that same Ursidae family, but they have their own little subfamily because they're not carnivores. So they're off on their own. And you may know the giant pandas really love bamboo. It makes up the bulk of the diet. And because they pretty much only eat bamboo and they're only native to China, their population levels got really low and they almost went extinct in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. Scary. Because yes. China was just, they were continuing to grow, you know, as many countries were, especially by the end of World War II. And a lot of panda habitats went away, which means they didn't have anywhere to get all their bamboo, and they were being pushed into new places. So that, combined with poaching, sad face, because apparently people really like panda bear fur and skin for, aww, like, jackets and stuff. Mm. So
I don't like that. That's sad.
Yeah, yeah. So poaching in the 30s, combined with driving them out of some of their native habitats, where their, like, main food source was, really caused wild populations to fall to, like, really, really, really scary levels. We don't have exact numbers. I saw, like, so many different numbers about where they were at that time. Like, National Geographic guesses they were at, like, 200.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is really low.
Yeah.
As they... China realized this was a problem, and China really takes pride in pandas. If you know anything about China, that's, like, one of their huge things. It's, they use the panda symbol for a lot of their, like, iconography. It's a big deal. So in the 60s, after, like, starting to work on conservation efforts and trying to prevent poaching, they established the Wolong National Nature Reserve. That has since been grouped into Giant Panda National Park. But in 1963, we got that National Nature Reserve to try to help protect the pandas and give them a space to breed and do their thing. And this was going okay. But then they stopped doing research and conservation efforts for a decade because of the Cultural Revolution that happened from 1966 to 1976. So China conservation fell to the wayside. But then we come out of the Cultural Revolution, and I don't understand a lot about Chinese history, so we're not going to talk about that a ton. That's for another time.
Of expertise.
But after we came out of that Cultural Revolution with, like, new leadership, we see restoration and research and conservation efforts. They started putting in pieces of legislation in the 80s, which made the penalties for poaching really severe, like, starting at a 10-year sentence. But if they found that you were, like, a really intense poacher or had done some really extreme things, you could get, like, a life or a death sentence for harming the panda bears. So these wild populations started to grow in the nature reserves, which they now have over 40 different nature reserves for the pandas, which is great.
That's cool.
But China realized they couldn't do it alone. So they started loaning out pandas to zoos all over the world to help breed the pandas, which is panda diplomacy, the loaning or gifting of pandas. So this sounds really silly. Like, what do you mean the pandas, like, were having trouble? Couldn't they just breed? Well, pandas have a very small fertility window, like 24 to 36 hours tops. So, like, very tiny window of time to make that fertilized egg happen. And then once they're in captivity, they don't really do breeding anymore. Like, they're not good at the natural breeding way, probably because they're not seeing other pandas doing it. So then the zoos and, like, the Chinese captivity centers where they're working to breed them have to rely on artificial insemination, which is fine, that happens. But it means that now humans are having to figure out this really tiny fertility window to make it happen.
Well.
And then, so if it wasn't already difficult enough that, like, captive pandas don't like to breed a ton, like, they're not great about it, and they have that small fertility window, pandas have this thing called a diapause. So it means that even when the little embryo gets fertilized, it doesn't necessarily implant itself to the uterine wall right away, which means the pregnancy isn't actually growing. So the average panda gestation is about 50 days. But if you have a diapause happening and it hasn't attached itself to the wall, this can be up to 160 days. Because until
the... That's a long time!
Yeah, so until the embryo puts itself on the uterine wall, the pregnancy isn't, like, actually happening in that it's growing and thriving. It's just sitting there as a fertilized egg.
That is super bizarre.
Yeah. And then pandas have they frequently have pseudo-pregnancies. So they end up with all the same behaviors as a pregnant panda, the same, like, hormone levels, but they aren't actually pregnant. Which means you can, like, do all the things, think they're pregnant, and they're not pregnant. And you're just like, well, okay, they can do ultrasounds. So when baby pandas are born, they're the size of a stick of butter.
Oh, I did know they were really tiny.
Like, so then think about that. While it's growing in the womb, they're really hard to see and detect through an ultrasound because they're so small. So these four things, the small fertility window, captive pandas not really being great about breeding, diapause, and pseudo-pregnancy, means that making a panda baby happen is a whole time, and it's hard. So, on average, in the wild, a female panda has a baby every 2 years. So even then, they're not breeding that much in the wild, right? Because a lot of, like, deer and stuff, they're typically having a set of babies every year. Mm-hmm. But pandas aren't even doing that. Pandas typically only have one baby at a time. They can have twins, and there are several cases of twins being born in captivity, but they're not having, like, these huge litters to reproduce. So all of these things are just making it really difficult to grow the panda population. So China has, through panda diplomacy, has gifted out some pandas, and they've also loaned pandas as part of their global breeding program, so that way it's not just the Chinese centers working to breed pandas. So you have a lot more, like, scientists and researchers on the case. Now, even when these pandas are loaned out, they're still technically owned by China. So, like, China can take them back at any time, and the babies that result from the pair, because they typically gift a breeding pair, those are also owned by China. But there are three pandas in the world that are not owned by China.
Really?
Yes. So, Mexico has Xinxin. I looked up how to say all of these giant panda names, and I used Google Translate and, like, listened to them. I am not perfect, so please forgive me if I mess one up. So, Mexico has Xinxin. That panda is the last of a line of two pandas that were originally gifted to Mexico in 1975 that live in the Chapultepec Zoo. China gifted them to Mexico because, quote, Mexico recognized China's authority over Taiwan at the United Nations. So it was like,
that's a really not cool reason.
That is the reason on record. So they gifted them a pair of pandas. they were the first zoo to successfully breed a panda in captivity outside of China. And they went on to have 8 panda cubs over the years. Only 5 of them made it into adulthood. That's also a thing we see with the pandas in captivity, even once they're pregnant. We sometimes have issues once they're born. Many tend to die right after birth from pneumonia, or they just don't thrive. But Mexico's had 5 pandas, cubs, last over the years. And the last of that line is the female panda, Xin Xin. She's 33 years old. So she's 5 years away from being the oldest living panda in captivity. But when she passes, it's unlikely that Mexico will be given more pandas. So that is Mexico's panda. You can see her at the Chapultepec Zoo in Mexico City. And then Taiwan has 2 pandas. They were gifted to Taiwan in 2008 after a whole bunch of political stuff that I don't quite understand. Because there's a lot of restlessness and a lot of politics at play there. But they were gifted Tuan Tuan and Yin Yin as a breeding pair. So, and because they were gifts, Taiwan's government owns the pandas. So those are the 3 pandas in the world not currently owned by the Chinese government. And that's cool. But the majority of the pandas out and about in the world are just on loan. And they're in several places. Some of the most recent that you can see them at are Denmark, Russia, Australia, and South Korea. But they're throughout the world. These are commonly 10-year loan agreements, which can be renewed or extended depending, I think, on how the research program's going and probably also on, like, political stuff. But the first pair was sent to the U.S. in 1972 under the Nixon administration. Nixon and his wife were there, and she said she liked pandas. So the Chinese president was like, oh, we'll give you some. So they did send over a pair of pandas. And they were placed in the Smithsonian's National Zoo. As a return gift, we sent them a pair of muskox. I think we got the better end of the deal in terms of getting the pandas. But Ling Ling and Sing Sing were the first 2 pandas at the Smithsonian National Zoo. And the first, like, official panda sent to the U.S. as part of the loan program and through, like, panda diplomacy. Which leads us to the Smithsonian Zoo's pandas. 3 pandas, Mui Xiang, Tian Tian, and Shai Chi Ji, recently, in November 2023, went back to China. So that has effectively ended what's been a 50-year program with the Chinese government and the researchers through the Smithsonian for pandas. Them going back was the end of a 3-year extension on their loan that had been granted in 2020. So they've been there. This mating pair of Mui Xiang and Tian Tian were sent to the zoo in 2000 after that original pair of Ling Ling and Xin Xin were passed away. One of them died of heart failure, and the other had to be put down just because of age. So, but as a goodwill thing, and because we'd had panda cubs, they sent us another breeding pair. Cool. And the Smithsonian says on their National Zoo website that they have trained more than 1,500 protected area staff, wildlife professionals, and students in ecology, wildlife survey techniques, and geospatial technologies to support their conservation research and management for pandas. And they've also collaborated with more than 150 Chinese partners to produce over 115 books, book chapters, and scientific articles on wild giant pandas, associated wildlife, their habitats, as well as husbandry, veterinary care, and reproductive research on giant pandas in human care. So the National Zoo has done a ton of research. So everyone was like, why is the loan not being extended again? Why are the pandas having to go back? Well, thanks to a wonderful podcast episode sent to me by Carolyn, they spoke to Brandy Smith. She's the director of the National Zoo. And it was decided to return the breeding pair to China because of the ultimate goals of the program. Got to double check panda names again because there's so many panda names.
there were a lot.
So Muen Xiang and Tian Tian, the breeding pair, are past reproductive age at this point. So it's in their best interest because the goal for the National Zoo is to work as a breeding program. So it was in the best interest of the pandas to go back to the reserves in China now that they are past breeding age. And their cub, Xiao Qiji, was always meant to go back. So as part of the breeding programs, the babies, after being born, can stay at the zoo for up to 5 years and then are sent back to China. So at the end of the day, the cub was always going to go back. And because these two pandas are, like, past their reproductive age, it was in their best interest to go back as well and just, like, live out the rest of their life in the reserve. They're very confident that they will get another pair of breeding pandas because of all the work that they've done and everything that's happened. Brandy Smith did say that while there are no pandas there right now, they're doing updates to the enclosure and, you know, getting it ready for new pandas so they have a really enriching experience when they come, which is great. And an article from the AP does seem to suggest that we will be getting more pandas, specifically at the National Zoo at some point, that they do plan to send pandas back to the U.S. I'm loading it just so I can get the quote right. But the Chinese president has said that they will send new pandas to the U.S., calling them envoys of friendship between the Chinese and American people. We are ready to continue our cooperation with the United States on panda conservation and do our best to meet the wishes of the Californians so as to deepen the friendly ties between our people. So this is from an article in November. Them saying Californians suggests that the pandas might actually go to the San Diego Zoo. Who the San Diego Zoo did have a pair of breeding pandas that at the end of their loan in 2019 went back to China. So maybe it's a, well, they lost their pandas first, so they get them first again kind of thing. Not quite sure. But this quote came from a meeting between the Chinese president and President Joe Biden after they had a face-to-face meeting to help reduce tensions. So we don't quite know, like, when that might happen, but it does seem like the Chinese government is committed to sending more pandas to the U.S. So hopefully that means more pandas are coming. The National Zoo pandas going back is just one of many pandas, or they're just three of many pandas going back. The pair of pandas at the Memphis Zoo, one recently passed away in early 2023, and in April, the Memphis Zoo then sent the remaining panda back to China. I saw those pandas in 2019, and it was really awesome to see pandas in person. But that was a breeding program that really struggled. They had a lot of trouble trying to breed the pandas there. So they went back.
I actually got to see the three pandas that just went back at the Smithsonian last spring.
Oh, wow.
I got to take the girls and go see them. It was very fun.
They're really fun to watch in person. If there is a zoo near you that has a panda or a panda pair, I recommend it. They're very fun to watch. So Smithsonian Zoo pandas went back in November of 2023. The remaining Memphis Zoo panda went back to China in April of 2023. The San Diego Zoo pandas went back in 2019. And Zoo Atlanta, which is the only other zoo in the U.S. that currently has pandas, their loan agreement is set to end in 2024. A statement from them on their website says that they are preparing to have to send the pandas back. they currently have two female cubs, so it's likely that at the very least, they'll have to send the cubs back because the cubs were born in 2016. So the fact that they haven't had to send the cubs back yet is pretty surprising right now. So at the very least, those cubs will probably go back since we're past that five-year point. But if they don't renew the loan, then the breeding pair there will go back as well. So that will be four more pandas headed back to China, and it will mean there are no pandas in the U.S. However, all of these efforts, as wild and convoluted as it seems to, like, loan these animals out for 10 years at a time, and, oh, I cannot forget. So you loan the panda out for 10 years at a time, and these zoos have to pay $1 million a year to keep the panda. Like, they have to pay that money to the Chinese government.
Per panda?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're paying this money, which the money is supposedly supporting the nature reserves and the captivity centers that the Chinese government has to do research for the pandas. So I hope that's what the money is going for, because the efforts have seemed to be working. We're at recent count, there's thought to be about 1,800 pandas in the wild now between the reserves, which is great, and about 650 pandas in captive environments between the zoo loans and the captivity places within China. Mm-hmm. So they've moved from being like near extinction to just labeled as vulnerable, which is really great. That distinction changed in 2019 to give them that vulnerable classification, and China confirmed that, like, just because they were, like, moved up in the list of animal statuses, like, that things were getting better, they weren't going to, like, diminish their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's good.
So all that said, panda babies are very hard to produce. And it's created this whole loan system of panda diplomacy to try to help make more panda babies. And it's working. So.
We love to see it.
Yep. That's a very, like, quick overview, because, like, we could have spent just, like, a whole episode talking about all the places that currently have captive pandas and, like, how that's going. And, it, like, you could spend a whole time. And the U.S. isn't the only ones that are sending pandas back. If I'm remembering correctly, the Scotland pandas recently went back. And so I think we're at this point when a lot of these pandas are breeding pairs that cities or countries have had for like 30 years now. So now they're past breeding age. So it defeats the point of the program. Mm-hmm. So they're being sent back to have, you know, their geriatric good times. And then the hope is that younger breeding pairs will be sent back at some point to help continue these programs. So if you live near Atlanta, go see those pandas before they head back end of next year. Theoretically, it's not super confirmed, but they expect that that's what will be decided, that their loan won't be extended. And check out the zoos near you to see if there's pandas near you and see if they have some panda babies. Because it took a lot of effort to get them. So you should go and enjoy them. But that's what I have.
Very cool.
I mean, I can't get over just all of the things working against pandas to have children.
Like, seriously. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Like, oh, okay, oh, yeah. They just, like, aren't great at doing, you know, natural breeding when they're in captivity. Cool, whatever. Like, that's probably pretty common, I feel like. No. They also have, like, no fertility window. And just because you think they're pregnant doesn't mean they're gonna, like, give birth when you think because of diapause. And, like, maybe they're not actually pregnant at all. Maybe they're just acting like it. Like, that's a whole time.
It's a whole thing.
I think it's really interesting, though, to, like, look at the panda breeding programs that have been, like, more successful than others and, like, where they lie in terms of, like, the longitude and latitude lines with China, because pandas need a very, like, temperate kind of thing. So I'm like, the Mexico pandas are probably doing pretty good. Like, right. That's why they're probably doing so well. And then you get, like, the Atlanta ones, and you're just like, oh, okay, they had a set of twins. That's awesome. They've had like two or three sets of twins there at Zoo Atlanta, which is really cool.
It is cool.
Yeah. But there's a lot going on there with panda babies. But it's the perfect thing to talk about for our baby episode.
It is.
Agreed. So, everybody, for our podcast question this week, we would like to know, which magical creature do you think has the cutest babies?
It's a trick question. All of them.
All of them. You know which ones I want to see? I want to see the Billywig babies. What do those look like? Do they come out with a propeller?
I was going to say, there is a right answer, and we will be grading you all.
What? No!
I'm only kidding. But we would love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen.
And you can find us over on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can head on over to Patreon to support the show at patreon.com/speakbeastie, where our Patreon supporters get awesome monthly stickers designed by Carolyn.
Yes, and I will get caught up. Those will be awesome. I actually do have another idea for the Patreon supporters, but I don't know. Ooh. I have to finish up stuff and get a little bit more caught up first, but I have a plan.
Yay. We love all the stuff you do, so I'm sure it will be wonderful.
It's true. I have like stickers and things from you just around my desk because I like looking at them.
Well, I'm glad you do. My kids have started drawing now. It's really adorable.
I love it.
They've got their sketchbooks out. I'm very impressed, but I'm also biased in their mother. So, you know.
Hey, I mean, if you're not their biggest cheerleader, who's going to be, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode. Once again, a big congratulations to Jeff and Ashley.
Yay.
For their sweet, adorable Yay. Little beastie baby.
So cute.
Oh, so cute.
I'm Amy.
I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Liz. Case closed.
We'll be right back.